Welcome to Viv and Dave's Real Voices of Happy Valley. In this chat, we talk to Winston Plowes, who's an environmental artist. He makes art from stuff he finds outdoors, and he's fascinating. We met him, because we thought it would be appropriate, outside on a bridge at the top of Birchcliff Woods. So there might be extraneous sounds like goats, running water, wind, and maybe people going past. You might hear them too. Enjoy. Yeah, so I've got this now.
Good.
It's not doing anything, Dave.
What?
Press the button.
Press the red button. Always press the red button.
It can be scary.
Always press the red button. It's a good job you're not in control of nuclear armaments, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, actually, someone's cautious about stuff.
Given
like
that she's good at not pressing the red button, that might be a good job for her.
Can I just ask you first, do you like? What do you like to be called, Winston?
Winston's fine.
Yeah, okay.
I've had worse.
Right, yeah, fair enough.
And we all, so we want to chat with you about land art initially, but also get on to found poems and stuff like that, because you are an all-round interesting chap.
Well, I'm glad somebody thinks so, yes. We can chat about it.
Yeah. Right now, so tell us about the land art.
Yeah.
What is it? How did you get into it?
Where to start? So what is it? As an environmental artist, which is another word for a land artist, although it's maybe a bit broader, I use natural resources, sticks, stones, leaves, and make something usually outside, which is a sort of transient piece of art, something ephemeral, doesn't last.
So how do people see it? Do
well,
you take a photo
they often
of it,
don't.
Or,
yeah.
Or
yeah.
Do they come and watch
So it's funny, isn't it? I mean, often people don't see it. Or living here, though, now I've got to know a few people, I'll often get a message and somebody will say, oh, I've been walking up at Owl Chamber, and it must be you. Nobody else would do that.
Yeah.
I said, afraid so. What did you think? Oh, it was fantastic. I said, oh, that's nice. So it is nice to be able to share it, but I don't think we often get that chance as land artists. Sometimes if you're doing a commission, obviously you do, there are festivals, so there's a chance there to put something out there when people know where to come and see your stuff. But generally, if you're just on a beach making something, or here in Mayroyd, it is Mayroyd Wood, this one, isn't it? Yeah.
This is Birchcliff Wood.
Oh, is it now?
Mayroyd is down alongside the canal, as far as I'm aware.
Yes. Yeah. If you're in a wood like this one, then probably nobody's going to see it. It probably won't last long enough.
Mm. So, most people do this by writing messages on the beach or making sandcastles.
That's true. So people do actually do it, don't they?
Yeah.
And you could say that, well, somebody asked me the other week, well, why do you do it? Actually, I had to think quite a long time. And then I thought, well, why do people do crosswords? Because you complete that, don't you? But then you don't keep it. Yeah.
We've just done one with a cup of tea before
and
we came out to
enjoy
the
it.
House.
So it's like making art. It's something that is enjoyable, rewarding in a different way, maybe. But it's not. It's just a temporary thing. And it's like that, isn't it? But I think my main motivation to do it is that it gives you a connection with nature.
Mm-hmm.
So each time you make something, you're looking more closely. You're noticing. Nearly. You're noticing the edge of the walkway, not in that
do
case.
Move
yeah, and I'll hang on.
we're all holding on now.
Of course, we wouldn't be able to do this, would we, if it wasn't for the wonderful Calderdale Right Away Service.
And crows,
I think.
Built the steps that I've walked up today.
Yes. And that we've walked down.
I did once this arrived a few years ago.
Yeah.
I assumed it was them,
yes,
so sent them a thank you message for doing it, because it makes the walk down from where we live into the town centre a lot easier.
And this is quite a busy, steep thoroughfare between Burnley Road and God knows us. Yeah. And a lot of people do use it, even when down there. And Graham Ramsden of Crowe's referred to that as the ski slope project, the steep steps come out in that gap.
Yeah.
Onto the where people park the cars alongside the road.
Yeah, I must admit, I go down that way, but I don't come up that way.
So when you make, I mean, before that, you used to have to haul yourself up on the wire.
Yeah.
So and people still did because it's such a great, it's a direct route. Aren't they wonderful? So that's good.
Yeah, it's nice to give them
but
a nod.
It, absolutely, and it's also it fits because Crowe's and yourself and a lot of other things and the nature itself. It's just changing the environment all the time, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, we're looking here this time of year, see the blackberries on the bushes there. Again, temporary. We know they'll be back next
year. I notice these things, but I find out so much. I didn't know that was called Sticky Willy until a few weeks ago.
Is it?
Yeah, the stuff that sticks on your back that you used to throw at each other as kids.
Yeah.
Cleavers is its proper name.
Oh, right.
Goosegrass is another name. The Greeks used to mash it up and put it in milk, and it used to split the milk if they were making
Right.
See, I only know that because I was dealing with it the other day. I thought, I'll find out the Latin name of this thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
See what it's about. Why is it called that?
Yeah.
I didn't know geese eat it.
And it turns out to have an interesting history.
As most things do, if you just notice them and look hard enough. I was just on the path around the corner. Look, it's my turn to get the phone out now.
Yeah.
And I noticed some galls on an oak tree. And they were from the artichoke gall wasp. Ardricus fecundatrix. Now, I didn't know that before until half an hour ago. I'd seen those galls before. Didn't know what they were. So it's a connection with nature. I always keep things in my pocket, Dave. I've got
a conker.
So I keep a seed conker in my pocket from last autumn to this autumn when they come down again. And I'll renew the conkers in my pockets of all my coats.
Oh, right.
Yeah, just because it reminds me that comes round. Just like you said, you know, everything has its place. I've been for a 10k run today, and I was running past Falling Royd, and there's a plum tree. Don't know what sort it is, but it's tiny. It's a scrawny thing, just growing out of the top of a wall over the footpath, and it drops its plums on the footpath because it's way too high to reach. They're delicious.
Yeah.
But it only does that for a couple of weeks every year, and every year it comes around, and I think, wow. How many years have I been here? Well, I've lived here for 17 years, but how many years have I been on this globe? And you forget, that does happen every year, doesn't it? That little thing. Or sometimes a bigger thing. You know, opening your curtains to snow.
That
was most years.
We had that a long time ago, in 1981. We were both brought up in Liverpool.
Okay.
You of miles and miles and miles of council estates, and got a job down in East Anglia in a little village called Wisbeach.
Oh, yeah.
And instantly learned more about nature than I had done in the previous 25 years, because you actually see the fields changing colour. The apples growing and getting bigger.
And people have seasonal jobs, you know, where the seasons do.
You can only do it when you're aligned with nature.
That's right, yes.
Everything else about the place was awful. that was a compensation.
Absolutely. And so you've done, you do exhibitions.
I had one at the Town Hall, actually, earlier this year. That was an interesting experience. That was good. Also had another one in the Town Hall in connection with Full Circle Funeral Services, because there's something about land art and its temporary nature that links in to a conversation about loss. You know, I mean, you said earlier, didn't you, about people do it, they draw their name in a beach. We've all done that. That will be rubbed out, won't it, like a giant etch-a-sketch by the tide.
That's right, yeah.
You know, and you make something like that, and you can't take the beach home, but you can take a photo. Is that a bit like looking at a photo of a loved one? I don't know, in a very superficial way. But there's all sorts of ways. The more we explore this idea, there's all sorts of ways in which doing this activity and thinking about it relates to loss, and maybe even help you cope with that a little bit.
So it can be quite therapeutic. I imagine it's quite therapeutic when you're just in the woods on your own, creating something.
Yeah, and then
it feels as though it must be good for you at that moment, anyway.
I think so. I think it's a sort of, there's a mindfulness aspect to it. It's quite a repetitive process. Mm-hmm. You've probably heard, and other listeners will have heard of Andy Goldsworthy. He's possibly the best known contemporary land artist in this country. And he had a seasonal job, as you were mentioning. He had a seasonal job as a stone picker in the fields. Yeah, and
I think a stone picker.
Yeah.
Is that so that things can grow and get the stones out of the way?
And so they don't interfere with the machines.
Mm.
And I think he also worked as a labourer on farms in other ways. Mm. And he said he learnt a lot of his methodology, his perseverance, just by doing that. And, and somebody asked me in a nutshell what I do earlier this week. And I said, well, it seems like maybe all I do is move things from one place to another.
Well, that seems quite a reasonable answer.
But that's only like, you know, dipping paint, dipping brush in paint, putting paint on canvas, isn't it? You know, it's just a different way of working. It is quite a methodical, it is a relaxing thing until the dog walkers appear.
Hi.
Look, speak of the devil. We have a dog approaching now.
I was going to say, you don't have a dog.
No.
And I would have thought it would lend itself to. Yeah. No?
No. No. No, this is a really interesting thing. Let's just see if
we're coming this way.
Are you coming over the bridge?
Step this way. We're doing an interview here, but you're very welcome to come past. We'll make space.
We should get out of your...
Yeah, I'm being interviewed.
Yeah.
Maybe
we could
just squeeze...
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just get out of your way.
You don't want to interview us?
Well, why not?
We've still got a lot of what's your name?
I'm Wendy. Hello.
Hello there. What are you up to, Wendy?
I'm just taking the dog for a little walk. Not meeting, but I'm going to be dog sitting, so we're having a little familiarisation walk.
Go on then, Lily.
Let's go.
David, that's interesting that we just started talking about dogs as that little dog appeared. Because I don't know, you see, I'm more of a cat person, really. What's that moth there? Yellow shell. See it?
Ah, yes.
Yellow shell. So,
and cats don't go on walks, do they, generally?
No, but I don't think dogs appreciate art. I might get into trouble now for saying that, because I've just completed a commission for a dog-based exhibition.
Is this the one in Halifax?
Yeah. Louis Benoit. Yeah. It was fantastic, actually. And Michael Stewart wrote a book of poems, The Dogs. So it's an anthology of dogs' poems. And I think there was one in the Times yesterday. And so I think that came first. And then Louis was inspired to contribute his dog paintings. And his mum's a sculptor, Moira. So she did some of those. There was a sound installation. And I did my land art. Mm. So it had to be friendly towards dogs. In fact, further, it had to be for dogs.
Yeah.
Right.
So I thought I'd do one piece called Fetch that was made of sticks. Mm-hmm. As another person approaches, it's not our bridge, is it?
No.
It's not our bridge, it's everybody's bridge.
Yeah. Oh, it's Mike Grimes.
Hi, Mike.
The other piece I made was called Treat, and it was made of dog treats, locally sourced. So that was actually art for dogs to interact with. And eat.
Yes, they did.
Right. With gusto. Yeah.
Hiya, Mike. We're doing our podcast and talking to Winston.
Oh, you're on the phone?
Yeah.
Right. I was just explaining.
Let you squeeze past there.
He's only here virtually.
Yeah.
As we were just saying, things change constantly.
Yeah.
People walking past.
My worst enemies are, I don't know if they include people. You know, when you're trying to make something and you know, somebody could come and... So this is an interesting idea that, back to Andy Goldsworthy, he spent some time on one day collecting all this snow from the crooks of trees. It was the last of the snow, just the last remnants of it. But when gathered together, it was enough to make a snowball. And he perched that on the edge of a river, because maybe it was a good place to get a picture of it. Went back to the car to get his camera, and he was coming back to the snowball, and a bloke was walking past it. And I don't know why, but he just wellied it into the river. People aren't they? You know
what they do.
Well, he interacted with it. Yeah. At least I suppose.
It's kicking stones down the street.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And
It's one of the drawbacks.
Yeah, and so nature, and so it? He was furious at the moment that happened because he thought I spent hours gathering together that little bits of snow to make that, and he's got it. It's in the river, and but from that he said that he learned that you can't possess anything in nature. Our nature, these aren't our woods or bridges, it's here for everybody to share.
Right.
And it's for dogs as well to walk in, you know, and like the towpath, everybody uses it where I live, and you know, that it's a shared resource, it's there for everybody. So so that was great to make art for dogs. One last bit on the dogs is that I was making something from poplar leaves at the where the sewage works is at Redacre Woods, just a bit further down, on the back there. Near the allotments, actually just where the people park for their allotments. I didn't know they were poplar leaves at the time, but looked them up later because they were enormous. So cutting out squares of these, making a grid out of them, and I heard the hounds approaching. You could hear them.
Like a pack of hounds?
Well, there was several.
Yeah.
And I thought, what's going to happen here? Oh no, I'm only halfway through. Disaster. And this lady appeared with five hounds on a branching lead. She was a dog walker, she was just getting on with her job, and she stopped, and although she was quite slight, managed to restrain them. And she said, goodness me, thank you for making the world just a little bit better.
That's lovely.
Totally unexpected. And she steered them round, you know, and everything was fine.
That's a nice reward in itself.
I thought so. I've remembered that.
We used to have a greyhound.
I'll stop you there because they're not dogs though, really.
As our friend Dennis says, just a lung on legs.
I haven't got anything better to say to qualify my statement than that. But they don't, anatomically, they don't really look like
They're weird. He couldn't
dogs,
sit down because he was too bony.
Yeah.
But anyway, I went to Halifax Art Gallery. And there was a painting there, a print by Louis Benoit of a greyhound.
Yep.
And so I bought it and it's on our wall.
Oh, brilliant. And yeah, fantastic.
He had an exhibition coming up at the Linden Mill Gallery.
Oh, yeah.
So I went to see him and I said, please, would you sign this picture?
Because
it hasn't got your signature on. And he was like really taken aback, like that anybody would want that. But he did. And then other people said, I've got a print by you. Will you sign
it? He's getting quite popular now, and I think.
Yeah. I mean, this is what, six or seven years ago?
A while ago,
So what occurred to me when I was looking at his paintings were that a lot of people looked at them and they said, that's our dog. I mean, it wasn't, of course. But somehow he'd captured the essence of the dog. Not like you can't really do in a photograph.
That's exactly what you said and why you bought that particular painting.
Yeah, because it had this, obviously being a greyhound, really long nose, but exaggeratedly, it had a kind of sad look about it, which Byron, our dog, tended to. He was an ex-racer. He'd never lived in a house before.
Yeah, my brother had rescued whippets, actually.
And, he was a great dog. We have a cat now. So.
But so if you'd seen a photograph, you'd think, well, I know that's not my dog. But the way he paints, maybe a dog just shaking itself after it's not wet, people could think, oh, how was
he does
that?
Some amazing kind of movement pictures, doesn't he? Yeah, so it's nice you were working with him and the dogs.
Well, and there will be more. I can't say yet, but there's going to be another stage of the exhibition, so I'll get to do something else hopefully with those guys.
Is there anywhere people can see your work now?
Well, no, because it's been washed away with the tide, taken by the wind.
They
can go onto Facebook. I've got an artist's page on there, and it's Winston Plowes - Land Artist, and I post up something on there every other day, and you can see that. So that's my little corner of the interweb at the moment.
And do you teach as well? That you teach?
So I think you said right at the start, Dave, that about the found poetry. So sort of where this started, weirdly enough. And so I teach creative writing to four adult groups at the moment, but also about 13 schools. So I'm really busy.
Busy, yeah.
I am. And that's great. And so the land art also feeds into that quite a lot. And some of the projects I've been doing recently have purely been the land art or land art mixed with writing.
So tell us about the found poetry. Where do you find poetry?
I didn't expect to be talking about this. That's fine. There are lots of ways to make poems. Mm. But a lot of people say, I can only do it, you know, when the muse takes me, when I'm in the mood. And for me, that's not very often, people will say. Mm. You know, I can't do it if I'm not at a workshop, or it's not really quiet, or I'm not in nature, or something like that. I need something. But found poetry is great, because it's a way that it's a more mechanical, a more systematic, a more scientific way of assembling something.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't require creative inspiration, to some extent. So you can just start cutting out words from a page, a newspaper. You can start collecting them from the street. I went to, I took the 901, the little bus to Huddersfield, last week, just for a day in Huddersfield, and spontaneously started collecting O's. on my camera phone, yeah? And I got to about 30 and I thought, they're so numerous. The oval vowel that I kept going, I got a bit obsessed with it, and I ended up with a grid of 100 O's.
Right.
What I'm going to do with it?
Sounds like a Roddy Barker sketch.
yeah.
Get four candles and O's.
I'll use that in school as an exercise, and we'll focus on that letter and see what we can do with it. But again, you know, open your eyes, really look, start noticing things.
Mm.
Start noticing that each leaf is different. That so many shop fronts have an O somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Not a zero, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
So they're all different shapes? Well, they're not different shapes, obviously.
Well, no, they are.
Different sizes.
Oh, well, they're different variations of the same shape, aren't they? Just like a particular leaf is a different variation of the same generic pattern. Crikey, I didn't know we'd be talking about this. But yeah,
well,
they are.
It's amazing
because
some
of the O's were engraved in stone, like the O in Harold Wilson in his statue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But some of the O's were stuck on graffiti stickers, tags. Mm. Some of them were on the road markings, slow.
Mm.
Some of them were in neon in a phone repair shop. You know, so they were everywhere. Once you start looking, and I can't get far nowadays, I can't keep stopping and looking at all these different plants and stones and leaves and things, because they've all got potential.
Yeah.
But it's the I was interested in the poetry because it seems to fit with the same sort of philosophy.
Yeah,
as the land art.
It does.
What's there?
I didn't, and
can we use it?
Yes. And like you say, maybe the found poetry, which is just one form, isn't it? Or one genre, if you like. Maybe that is the one that fits the best. You've made me think. That's great. I'm in the middle of a big project with the Bronte Parsonage Museum at the moment, and we get together and we do some writing and we make some land art, and the more we do that, the more connections we discover. It's a lovely project, and I do a live session, so we all meet there at the Parsonage, and then I make an online film so that anybody wherever they are in the world can watch that and do a version of the same thing. They can write something from a prompt. They can make something. And each one, there's one per season. So we've just done the summer one.
Fascinating. I mean, it fits with, I think we told you, our podcast is just Real Voices of Happy Valley.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that everywhere you look around us is an interesting person doing an interesting thing.
A different thing as well.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't know, I'd like to also say that, because I don't know how people look at us, you know, in this valley from the outside, especially when we've had all the Ann Lister stuff, we've had all the Bronte stuff that's been going on forever, we've got, you know, we've got Happy Valley now. How do people see us here? Do they all think that we're totally, you know, we're all poets wandering round with floppy hats on?
Or we're completely lawless and stabbing people.
Yeah, what do they think?
Yeah.
We're not all mass murderers.
No, I don't know. I mean,
well, it's partly why we're doing it, really, isn't
good,
it?
Yeah. I think that's a good enough reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a day in the life of a of a Hebden Bridge artist. And so, for example, today I've wasted time on Facebook. I've played games online. I thought I'd start doing my tax return today because I've got a bit of spare time. So they're all normal things that everybody does, aren't they?
Yes,
I guess.
Apart from the tax.
Well, most people leave it to the last minute.
I did the tax at the end of January. I don't often play games online, but
I play Scrabble online.
Well, this was backgammon.
On Facebook.
But to reassure you, I didn't get far with the tax return. I'll probably end up with you in the same boat in January.
How many hours in procrastination?
Indeed. So I did all those things. And tonight I'll have a glass of wine and I'll watch Columbo. I don't know how many people do that.
I love Columbo.
But I've run 10K up to the top of Hoo-Howell. Just looking at that, it's just such a beautiful place.
Hoo-Howell?
Yeah, so if you go up where the ice cream factory is in Cradvale, so to the right of that road there's Broadhead Clough Nature Reserve. Mm-hmm. And if you climb up the path and the steps all the way up there, you are then at the lip of a sort of natural horseshoe in the hillside.
Oh.
Yeah, it's called Hoo-Howell.
I didn't know.
Hours in there as well.
Loads. Three. Yeah. Three for such a short while. And I just ran. I didn't go that way. I went up Old Chamber and along there. So and I was hoping to see swifts from above.
Would you like to come for a cup of tea?
I'll come up with you.
Yeah.
Of course I will.
Go on. Well, Winston came back to our house, had a cup of tea, and carried on being really, really interesting. we didn't record all of that.
Actually, being a Manchester guy originally, he went for Vimto while we had tea.
Okay, so if you've enjoyed this and want to hear more real voices of Happy Valley, follow us on whatever platform you listen to us on, and go on our Facebook page, Real Voices of Happy Valley, and like and follow that too. Okay,
there.
We'll be back in a week or so.